The hyperbole is done. Now we can finally play the game.
Look at that. Oh, my goodness. One man. Goodbye. Hello, Haskins. Intercepted by Teague. George Teague to the end zone. Touchdown. We're going to play football. Yippee. The ball's up in the air. Caught. Touchdown. Ball goes into the end zone, and it is incomplete. Oh, the phone, everybody. There's a penalty flag thrown, and I think it's against Miami. The royalty of college football is in assembly at the Rose Bowl 2006.
Oh, welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable 2014 College Football Week 13 show, brought to you by www.southbeachshopping.com, the online shopping network of the Philly Press Box Radio College Football Network. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, college football national expert Terry House. And Terry, tonight we're missing our third partner, the Goon. Keith Conlon, our Penn State and Big Ten expert, cannot be with us tonight. He's got some technical issues going on. So welcome back, Terry. We're gonna go it ourselves tonight.
Well, we're going to miss the Goon for sure, Bill, but we'll do our best. And we're not going to have our Penn State guy with us, but we'll talk about that in some other games. And obviously there's a ton to talk about. We're only a couple weeks away from the committee announcing, who's going to play in the inaugural playoffs. So let's get to it, my friend.
That's right. All right. Our www.south-beach-shopping.com phone lines will be open at 929-477-2855. So feel free to call throughout the show. All opinions are welcome, but please be respectful of other people's opinions. Well, Terry, it doesn't look like there should be much change, I wouldn't think, in the committee rankings tonight that are getting ready to come out, except possibly flipping Baylor and TCU now that Baylor won handily and TCU had a bye week, so their schedule kind of balanced out. And unless somehow Keith's two-loss Georgia Bulldogs somehow managed to jump one-loss Ohio State due to the Buckeyes' struggles against Indiana, surely that won't happen, do you think?
No, I don't think they're going to jump Ohio State. Like you said, Ohio State struggled a little bit there. But, I think with the committee, when they're looking at this and trying to take into account, obviously, the entire resume, I think bits and pieces of games get lost, in the shuffle. And I don't expect to see that. But, I mean, you never know. We'll find out here shortly. But I think Ohio State will be safe.
What do you think? I mean, is your top four the same, or do you see any difference? We're going to talk some about that Florida State game, but do you see them moving any or still sitting at third?
Yeah, I think the final four will be very similar. I think it'll be similar to what it was last week, and I think, we all had our own take on that, but I don't think there's going to be too much movement. I actually think that we won't see a whole lot of, some of these bigger moves, I guess, until after this weekend. I mean, you have the Iron Bowl, which obviously is a big deal. Auburn is a really good football team and has a chance to beat Alabama. You have Mississippi State and Ole Miss playing. So, I think we're going to talk about some of these games. But, that obviously is a game where if Bo Wallace shows up, I mean, Mississippi State, who is, sitting at four, they could easily be out of this, and I think they will. And I think we'll see Ohio State getting that last spot. But the Baylor-TCU, that dynamic is really interesting to see how that plays out, as you mentioned in your introduction there. Is Baylor going to jump TCU at this point since their resumes are a little bit more similar? I don't know. I mean, the head-to-head game is going to come into play at some point. So we'll find out here in a short while what the committee's thinking. But I really don't see – I don't think there's going to be too much jockeying going on this week. I think you'll see a lot more of that next week and the week after, obviously, with the conference championships.
All right. Well, as you can see, if you're watching, UCLA has jumped a spot to 8, Georgia up 1-9, and Michigan State up 1-10. So I think that probably means that the top seven, they're all going to be the same teams. It'd be just interesting to see what the order is going to be. Funny that they're not showing that seventh team because they've only been showing six. Now they're holding back one more team at seven, which is kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, it definitely is. Maybe there was a little bit of jockeying. I guess we'll find out here in the next few minutes. But those three teams at 8, 9, and 10 are pretty good football teams too. They most certainly, you know, if we talked about this off air a little bit. You know, if the playoff were eight teams, which I think it eventually will go to, I'll tell you what, you know, Georgia, UCLA, and Michigan State, any one of those three teams could potentially beat anybody in that top four as well. So, you know, we'll see what transpires over, you know, the next couple of years. But I would love to see it go to eight because I think that's a true, you know, reflection of the teams that really have a shot at winning the national title, especially in a year where there isn't a dominant team. But, you know, it'll be interesting.
Yeah, and the funny thing would be is even at number eight, you know, there's still seven one-loss or no-loss teams. There still would be that battle of who should be number eight.
Because the eighth
team is going to be a two-loss team.
You're right, but that's a good thing. You know what? For college football, the interesting thing is they've always thrived when there's been controversy, and it's just people talking about it, which is great. So, I mean, the interest level in college football is higher than it's ever been with this playoff. And, you know, we're leaving out probably four or five, maybe even six really quality football teams outside the playoff, you know, at the end of this. But even having eight, there's still, like you just pointed out, there's going to be two or three teams that are probably deserving of at least being in the conversation. So even going to eight, I don't think we're going to see any drop-off in terms of the overall interest.
Yeah, and I agree. I think, you know, whoever put this idea together and, you know, finally – and came up with this playoff, and a lot of the experts thought that this would hurt college football. You got to be kidding me! I mean, it is constant. You know, matter of fact, on the local news here, I saw down here in Florida just a little bit ago, at 6 o'clock, and they were talking about how Florida State's getting a bad deal. You know, why doesn't the committee like Florida State? I mean, they're even talking about it on the news. You know, the local news.
Yeah. Well, I mean that's you know it's obviously on their radar because it's in their region there. But look, Florida State's still in the top four. As long as they win out, they will play in the playoff, regardless of whether they're first or fourth. They will be in the playoff if they win out. So there's really nothing to worry about for Florida State fans or you know the media down there. As long as they take care of business against you know Georgia Tech and Florida, you know I think they'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, let's talk a little bit about that Florida State game. You know, they went down to the buzzer again. They win at the gun. Boston College missed a field goal with about 3 or 4 minutes to go in the game that would have put them ahead.
Yep.
And that doggone Jameis Winston figures it out.
Yeah, we've talked about this many times. Jameis Winston, you know, for all the off-the-field things that go on, you know, he really is a special football player. He's one of the better football players at that position that we've seen in a long time. And he just has a knack for making plays. You know, he's a very poised person there in the pocket. He's a very polished, you know, football player. He's a great quarterback. He's got all the physical attributes. And, you know, like we said, for all the off-the-field issues that the guy has, you know, he is just one of the best quarterbacks that we've seen in a long time. And Florida State as a team, they seriously have a knack for just finding ways to win games. And it's not the most impressive situation, you know, as we've talked about week after week, and they've been in these tough games. And look, Boston College is a good football team. They're a physical team. You know, they run a little bit of a gimmick offense with that kind of hybrid Florida, you know, spread that Urban Meyer used to run. You know, so they have some interesting pieces, and when they put it together, they're challenging, a little bit like Georgia Tech with that offense. So I figured it was going to be a close game, but Florida State at home, you figure they're going to take care of business. So, and it was a little bit too close for comfort, but, you know, Florida State defense came up with some plays. Obviously, they benefited from a few, you know, special teams miscues from Boston College, but again, Jameis Winston, you know, he just always comes through. The kid, you know, the kid's amazing. Florida State hasn't lost a game in two seasons now. You know, they're poised to beat Florida this weekend and then play Georgia Tech in the ACC championship, and they should get by both those games. So, you know, once again, they find a way to win, and you know, two more games, and they go on to the playoff.
Yeah, I went with Florida State last week as my number one. But I don't know that I could do that again this week. I just think that they've pushed the envelope a little too far for me to think that they're the best team in the country. And I know you being a Pac-12 guy, you know, you like those Ducks out there. And I'm not sure I'm not going to go with Oregon at this point as my number one. As I said last week, I'm just not all that convinced on Alabama yet either. We'll find out a lot about them here Saturday.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, to your point about Florida State, I think anybody that has that opinion on Florida State has a right to, because they haven't been as impressive as some of the other teams. But when you really look at the landscape of college football, look at the top four that they just announced. They're not one of those teams is a dominant team. They're all really good teams. Then they've separated themselves from maybe 11 on down. But any one of those teams could lose any given week to a really quality opponent. So I agree that Oregon has probably been the most impressive the last probably 4 or 5 weeks. So I wouldn't have a problem with them being number one either. Florida State, as we said, just hasn't been quite as impressive, even though they're undefeated. So I have no problem with them sitting at three. And Alabama, look, on paper, Alabama's probably the most talented team in the country. There's no question about that. From top to bottom, both offensively and defensively, and obviously they have the best coach in college football. They're probably on paper again. They're probably the most talented team. So, in Mississippi State, I don't think we're going to see Mississippi State in that fourth spot come 2 weeks from now. I think Ohio State or Baylor or TCU, one of those two teams, will be in that spot. I don't think the SEC gets two teams in, and I think Mississippi State might struggle this weekend. It'll be interesting to see, with Ole Miss, if Bo Wallace can play well enough, they should be able to upset Mississippi State. But there's no dominant team this year. There's a lot of really good teams, and any one of those six teams could most certainly be number one. I mean, truthfully, I mean, if you really look at the resumes of all these teams, but Oregon, I'm kind of with you. I think Oregon with Marcus Mariota, I think they have, if they can stay healthy, especially on the offensive line, they have a really good chance to win the whole thing this year.
Well, let me ask you, as we've talked playoffs, and, we've been following Villanova all season. They finished the regular season with a nice win at Delaware. They now sit as the number six seed in the FCS playoff system. How do you like this setup? How do you like the eight teams that get by, 16 play to get to the eight? I mean, to me, I think it's a great playoff system that's been going on for years, and, I think the FCS – and the lower levels have it right.
Yeah, it's a good point. I agree that it's a wonderful system, I think, for, the level of play here. They don't have bowl games, obviously. So, for them to have 16 teams, it's a little bit easier for them to navigate that. So, for their setup, for what they're doing at that level, I think it's perfect. I like the whole eight teams have to kind of play in to get to that next level, that next group. And as you mentioned, Villanova, we've been following them all year. And, they've had a tremendous season. And they're one of the better teams. They're at six right now. They're one of the better teams in the country. And, if it weren't for a couple close games there, a couple close losses, they very well could be undefeated. And one of those games was to Syracuse, where they probably should have won that game. So but Villanova's in a really good spot. They're either going to get James Madison or Liberty in the second round, I should say. And then they're going to, if they win that game, they're going to probably face Jacksonville State, who's been a really good football team all year. So the games are going to get tough as they move on, but they're more than talented enough to play with any of these teams that are left in this bracket. But I'm with you. I love this. I love that they're gonna play the games on the field. One of the things that a lot of us college football fans have been clamoring for a long time is to have the teams play it, play it off. I mean, we haven't had a playoff. This is the first year of a 4-team playoff, and I think we've all been jealous of the FCS level of having their teams actually play for the national title in the true sense. So, I guess the Dr. Pepper guy just couldn't get to the big boys quick enough.
That's right. Well, listen, hey, we've got a caller. Let's bring him on. You're on with Bill and Terry on the Philly Press Box Radio. Yep. Do we have you? Hello, caller. Maybe we don't have him, Terry. We'll see if he gets back on here.
Maybe that was the Dr. Pepper guy.
Maybe. He's showing he's on, but we're not hearing him right now. So let's see what we got. But yeah, I'm kind of excited about it. Hello. Oh, I guess not. All right. Well, let's go ahead and let's talk about this Penn State game for just a little while, Terry. They went out to Illinois, and I know Keith was really fired up about this game, and I wanted to talk to him about this because him and I were texting, messaging during the game, and he was not a happy big man this week, and it didn't have anything to do with the NCAA or the free report. It had to do with what was going on the football field, and the Nittany Lions just didn't get it done out there in Champaign.
No, they really didn't, and I'm sure he was fired up, and I felt for you guys as I was watching this game because it was difficult to watch. I mean, it just wasn't a very clean football game, and you know both teams really struggled on offense, and you know I think Illinois actually ended up outgaining Penn State in this game, but the one positive I think for Penn State was they actually started to run the. This is 2 weeks in a row where they've run the football pretty well. Akil Lynch really had a good game. I think he ended up with 130-plus yards and a touchdown. But the offensive lines looked really good the last 2 weeks. They've looked a lot better. I mean, they most certainly are giving their backs a chance to get to that second level. You know, I know they're a little bit healthier up front, and, you know, it would have been great to have Keith, you know, talk a little bit about, you know, some of the additions that have come back and, you know, some of the guys just getting healthy. You know, and Hackenberg, you know, once again, they struggled to throw the ball. They actually didn't throw the ball a whole lot. I think he only attempted 16 passes in this game. And he's really had a difficult 5 weeks. You know, once they really got into the heart of the Big Ten schedule, he's really struggled. And, you know, they kind of in some ways gave him a little bit of a breather here. And the run game was effective enough for them to put themselves in a chance, you know, with the chance to win the game. The defense was fantastic once again for Penn State, as they've been all year. They only surrendered 283 total yards. You know, and Illinois really struggled in the first half offensively. It wasn't until they made the change at quarterback and O'Toole came in the game, and he kind of gave them an option of, you know, really running the football as well as being able to distribute it from the pocket. And he really changed the dynamic. Wes Lunt just wasn't very effective against that Penn State defense, and mainly because he's more of a stationary quarterback. And, you know, when you give Zettel and you give those defensive ends, Barnes and those guys, a chance to pin their ears and get after the quarterback, they're really good. This Penn State defense, as we talked about last week, this is one of the better defenses they've had in a while. I don't know about personnel-wise. I don't think, you know, this is the most talented defense, you know, individually, you know, by position that we've seen at Penn State, but collectively as a group, the coaching staff, they just have these guys in the right place. And this is a young defense. You know, you listen to the announcers during the game, and it's freshman, sophomore. I mean, this is a young defense. It's an exciting defense. I think they're pretty athletic. They really get after it. And, you know, if I were a Penn State fan, I'd be fired up about the future there on that side of the ball. And offensively, I really think it's going to come around. In this game, again, they weren't very explosive. They only tallied 265 yards. Again, they didn't throw the ball very well, only averaged about almost 6 yards per pass attempt. But, you know, there weren't a lot of turnovers. They possessed the ball. They ran the ball fairly well. It's a shame they came up short. Offline, you mentioned that Penn State, if they had a chance to actually, you know, get a few points across the board early on with a field goal, if they would have went up 10-0, you know, it might have been a different ball game. But, yeah, it was pretty sad, for Penn State. They're the better team. They were the better team. You know, they should have won this game. They weren't clean. I'll let you get into some of the other things because I know you followed up and watched it as well. But yeah, it was a tough one. It was a real tough one. I'm encouraged by the offensive line and the rush game, and the defense has just been fantastic all year. But you know, Hackenberg, I'd really like to see him kind of get things turned around. And Michigan State comes to town. That's going to be a tough task for him. But you know, for them to have a little bit more success and a little bit more momentum as they close the season out, they're going to have to right the ship there in the pass game, and Hackenberg's going to have to find that confidence that he had very early on in the season.
Yeah, let me ask you. I mean, I want to get to the special teams, but first I want to ask you, because we've talked every week about the running game and what a struggle it's been for them. They're finally getting a little bit of momentum going. Akil Lynch, as you said, you know, a second real nice game. He fumbles the football in the second quarter, and he gets benched. And nothing against his replacements, you know. I mean, that's all part of the game. But, man, oh, man, what a decision to make to bench your guy who's finally coming around and finally gelling with the offensive line and making some progress. And, the running game shut down.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not in the locker room. I don't know what their policies are. You know, a lot of position coaches will have, you know, certain mandates that, you know, if the ball goes on the carpet, you know, you got to sit out for a little while. I mean, that you know, that could be the case with their team. I'm not sure. Like I said, I'm not in the locker room, but it is a tough decision, especially when you are getting a little bit of momentum there. You know, it is a teaching moment. You know, you obviously want to make sure that you secure the football. And look, Akil Lynch, I mean, I really like this kid. I remember early on in the season, I was kind of, you know, I made the point that I'd love to see them kind of get him involved. He's the most natural runner that they have on that football team. That's been the case since day one. And you're right, it's tough when you see a young kid, you know, put the ball on the floor like that. But, yeah, teaching moment, you know, maybe it's just a mandate, like I said, that they have. You know, most teams have something in place where, you know, they have to sit the kid down and, you know, talk to him about it and kind of walk him through that and make sure that doesn't happen again. And he was pretty protective of the ball, you know, from that time on. But he had a heck of a game. You know, he's the kind of guy that, you know, going forward, I think they can give him the ball 25, 30 times a game, you know, like some of the backs that they've had in the past, and he's gonna be effective. You know, he really is. He's a solid football player. He's got good balance. He's got really good vision. You know, I think he, you know, he's not the most explosive player in the world, but he's a big guy. He's got, you know, good enough quicks to get to, you know, get to the second level. I think they're onto something there, and, you know, it would be great to have, you know, kind of a change of pace back if they can find that guy that can really be dynamic and kind of do some of those things that, you know, that Lynch can't do, you know, kind of that third down back, if you will. But, yeah, I mean, he had a really good game, and like I said, I think I would love to hear your thoughts on it as well. But, you know, I think it was just one of those things, the teaching moment, you know, especially for a young back. You want to make sure that, you know, they obviously understand the importance of holding on to the football. And in a game like this where, you know, you lose 16-14, sometimes, you know, turnovers like that are the difference. So it's unfortunate because they did have some momentum, and, you know, you want to see him just continue to get stronger. And obviously he was the biggest part of their offense. He was about, you know, almost 50% of what they did on last Saturday. So, you know, it's one of those things that happens, and, you know, sometimes you just have to make those tough decisions in game and really, you know, think about it from a teaching standpoint.
Well, and I'm sure that's really what it was about because, you know, I mean, it just the timing's bad, but it's a big picture. You know, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon for this program to get back on its feet and become what we both think it's going to become. And,
yeah,
you know, for Lynch, 130 yards last week, 137 or 2 weeks ago against Temple, 137 this week. I mean, he's the man. There's no doubt he's the man. So just interesting timing for me as far as Coach Franklin having to make that move. But now let's talk special teams. I mean, you mentioned the missed field goal that puts them up 10-0, and they don't even get the ball off the ground. You know, that's one flub. They jump off sides on 4th and 4 that ends up being working down to a touchdown the other direction. As the broadcaster said, that's a turnover. So, I mean, that killed them. Then they kicked the ball out of bounds, you know, that allowed some more momentum to go. Just they made 4 mistakes on special teams that, to me, really, you know, kind of put this game out of reach for the defense couldn't hold the rope any longer.
Yeah, I mean, we've kind of talked about that from the beginning of the year, because looking back at Penn State's season last year, they had a lot of issues as well with, you know, some of these same things on the special team side of it and that facet of the game. We talked about hitting yardage at the very beginning of the year, and like you said, you know, when you kick off and you kick out of bounds, I mean, that's the kind of hitting yardage that, you know, you might not see on the box score, but those are the kinds of plays that are very important, especially for a team that, you know, is in these tight games and they're struggling to kind of, you know, to win some of these games. I mean, those are the plays that you can't make. You know, you mentioned the 4th down and 4th with the penalty. And, I mean, like you said, it's a turnover. You cannot do those sorts of things, especially when you're, you know, you're fighting for your lives to win games week in and week out. So, you know, in a game like this, it really comes to the forefront. And you see that some of those issues that they're having in that facet of the game. And, you know, it's unfortunate. I, you know, in my life, I don't think of Penn State as being undisciplined. I don't think of them as, you know, struggling in this facet of the game. It's always been something that's, you know, been commonplace for them to be really sound in the kicking game. And, you know, it just seems like it's been a mixed bag for the last couple of years. And to me, that's just not Penn State football. You know, to me, Penn State football is a solid defense, running the football effectively, being very physical at the point of attack, and obviously being very sound in the kicking game. And, you know, we don't really see a lot of that sort of thing going on in this program right now. And it's not Franklin's fault. You know, he's kind of coming into it with the sanctions and everything going on. He's trying to kind of, you know, get things back to, you know, where they were. And I think O'Brien did a good job of kind of, you know, moving in the right direction. But it's going to take time. It's going to take time, you know. You know, when you replace, you know, obviously a legend, and, you know, you come in there and there's going to be that transition time. But some of these things, like you just mentioned, that's just not Penn State football to me.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you, too, kind of, I guess I've been hearing a little bit of chatter about this on the different social media sites and things like that. Christian Hackenberg threw the ball 16 times. You know, for 93 yards, completed 8 for 93 yards. It wasn't a nice day, and it was cold and all that, but Illinois threw the ball 42 times. They played from behind. From the Penn State standpoint, was your take that they coached and played not to lose rather than playing to win?
I think so. I think a little bit of that. I think that was on display. I think when you don't, you know, they could have most certainly been a little bit more aggressive in the pass game. And look, they have, you know, Deshaun Hamilton, you know, they have Bill Belton out of the backfield, Godwin, I mean, Geno Lewis, they have guys in the tight ends. One of the things that bothers me the most about this offense, and I think you continue to see this week in and week out, is they're not utilizing the tight ends like we saw the last couple of years. And those guys are weapons. You know, James and Gesicki, you know, obviously they had an injury there with the young kid from I think Mechanicsburg. Brenneman, I think. Yeah, Brenneman, yeah. I mean, they have some weapons there, and it's unfortunate that, you know, they just don't seem to be utilizing that. You know, sometimes a tight end can be a quarterback's best friend, just like, you know, checking down and getting the ball to your running backs in space, you know, after you go through your progressions. You know, tight ends, especially with a guy like James with that size, you know, in Carter, he wasn't even on the box score. You know, he wasn't in the box score. You know, they're just not utilizing some of their pieces as well. And I think for a struggling quarterback, you know, giving him some easy throws early on, you know, some of those bubbles, doing some things to just, you know, get him comfortable. And he hasn't been comfortable for 4 or 5 weeks. And like I said a couple weeks back, to me, it's just confidence. And, you know, right now I think he doesn't have confidence. And to your question right now, I don't think that, you know, Franklin and his staff has a lot of confidence in Hackenberg. But, you know, as a coach, I think, you know, when you have a quarterback that's as talented as he is physically, you know, you still have to do certain things, especially with a young guy, to make him feel comfortable, give him some easy throws early on, you know, give him some throws to the tight end, you know, some easier throws in the middle of the field where, you know, he doesn't have to go through his progressions and it's a quick little, you know, dive fake and pop, you know, you hit the tight end right there. I mean, they just have to do little things just to get him back to being comfortable, and they most certainly coached not to lose this game, and they just didn't feel comfortable turning the ball over to him. And, you know, that's unfortunate because that's not the Hackenberg that we saw early in the season. And I don't care if they were playing, you know, teams that are lesser teams. You know, his confidence, his ability to distribute the football, nobody questioned that early on. It's just been the last 5 or 6 weeks here where, you know, the team as a whole has struggled offensively, and he just doesn't have that confidence. They got to find ways to make it a little bit easier on him. And, you know, because of that, because they're not confident in him right now, they most certainly were coaching that game not to lose it. And, you know, from my standpoint, when you're a team like Penn State and you're trying to get back to where you want to get back to and you're struggling with, you know, roster stuff, with the sanctions, and you're struggling with the young team, I don't think you can play passive. I mean, why not play aggressive? Why not just go after it? Why not just go out? Look, the expectations are not, you know, it's not like we expected Penn State to win 10 games this year. You know, I think everybody thought it could be anywhere from 8-4 to, you know, 6-6, which we might have. But, yeah, I mean, there's no question that they were coaching that game not to lose it. And that, in my mind, that's unfortunate.
Well, I'm with you. I mean, why not play to win? Because you ended up losing anyway. So your plan, if that was your plan, it didn't work. And interesting about the receivers that you mentioned, you know, of his 8 completions, he threw to 7 different guys. Akil Lynch was the only guy with 2 catches, and he had 35 yards. But 5 of his 7 guys – were for less than 10 yards. Belton 1 for 9, Lewis 1 for 9, James 1 for 9, Gesicki 1 for 7, and Hamilton 1 for 6. So, you know, you may be throwing it to different guys, but you only threw it there once, and you didn't gain too many yards when you did it. So I'm with you. I think they've got it. They've got to get him back in the flow of the game, and he's still the man. But boy, he looks a little rougher each week as we move forward.
Yeah, he really does. I think one of the I don't know if it was Matt Miller, whoever was doing the game on Saturday. I mean, they even commented that, you know, a lot of the NFL chatter is that this kid is one of the more talented quarterbacks in the country. I mean, honestly, when you look at him physically, you watch him play, you watch his innate tools, there's very few quarterbacks. I don't care, Mariota, I don't care who you put up there. There's very few quarterbacks that have the physical attributes that this kid has. There's no question in my mind. This kid is one of the more talented quarterbacks in college football. And right now, his play is it's just not showing, you know, what he's capable of. And, you know, they really need to just sit down and figure out a way to get him comfortable again, because this kid is just too talented to be playing, you know, the way he's playing right now. And it's unfortunate. And I'm sure a lot of those short passes that you were mentioning, you know, a lot of those were probably of that bubble, you know, variety, those quick hitters. And, you know, they need to do that. Like I said, I think they need to find the tight end a little bit. And, you know, when a quarterback's struggling, you know what? Let's see you try to stretch the field every once in a while. Look, they got some good speed, obviously, with Lewis. You know, early in the season, they were running a lot of go routes with him. They were giving some opportunities for him to, you know, win some one-on-one battles. And Godwin's a big kid. I mean, a big physical kid. You know, they have players. They have players to even, you know, one-on-one to take advantage of some of these matchups. And right now, it's just unfortunate because there's just no confidence in the coaching staff and no confidence in their quarterback. And it's just it's a sad state for that offense, because they're actually pretty darn talented.
Yeah. Well, you know, and Matt Millen kept pointing out, and maybe this is part, you know, another part of the problem was the as the season went on and these young receivers got against better competition when they got into conference, that, you know, they're not getting the separation that they were getting. So you have a learning process there, and he pointed that out during the game as well. You know, you have another new coach, another new staff, another new system. You have a lot of young kids. You still have a young quarterback. So, you know, it doesn't all just flip a switch and all of a sudden it's all good. So maybe it's just a learning process throughout, and, you know, get through this year, keep getting better. Maybe, you know, they're bowl eligible. They're going to get those extra practices and only get better.
Yeah, I think that's all you can do is, you know, put your best foot forward and, you know, go into the off season. You know, they're gonna play in a bowl game, which is fantastic. They're gonna get 15 extra practices, so they can even get more of these young players in, get them more reps. And I think, you know, Millen's right. Obviously, these guys aren't separating, but, you know, it'd be great to have some of that coach's film and to really break it down and really find out what's going on from behind the scene, you know, to really see, you know, if he's just missing opportunities, if there really isn't any separation. You know, I would love to just sit down there and watch tape with these guys just to figure out, you know, what's going on. I have a feeling that, you know, there definitely is, you know, some separation issues with some of these guys with better competition, but I think Hack is also a little bit you know, wary of just letting the ball go now at this point. So, and again, that's unfortunate because the kid is just so talented, so talented.
I'm with you. All right. Well, let's before we get on to talking about the rest of the big games, let's thank our sponsor. If you like shopping online, we've got the place for you, especially as Christmas is coming along. You can do all your shopping from one location and get cash back on your purchases from over 3,000 stores. It's the South Beach Shopping Mall Without Walls, and it's simple to do. Go to www.south-beach-shopping.com and click on the top shop tab. From there, click sign in, register to become a preferred customer. That's it. You're free to look around at all the products and click on the All Stores tab and check out all 3,000 plus network stores by alphabet. All the big ones are there. It's a great opportunity to get cash back and even comparison shop. And best yet, it's free to register. If you have questions, click on the Contact Us tab on the homepage or click on your shop consultant, South Beach Shopping. They'll leave a message. And Terry, I can tell you, yesterday my wife needed some things. We went on some little bit more of an obscure store, and they had it on South Beach Shopping. We bought her stuff that she was looking for, got 5% cash back on the final bill, and it worked like a charm. So it does work out there.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you can save some money, that's a good thing, right?
That's right. 5% of anything is good, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Okay, well, hey, let's talk about the Buckeyes. You know, Keith likes to talk Big Ten, and Indiana gave the Buckeyes a fit. You know, they came up in the fourth quarter and scored 21 points that make it look like, you know, it was a little bit bigger spread than it really was. But Indiana gave them a fit, and does this hurt the Buckeyes in your eyes, regardless of what the committee says?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you're right. It was a tight game in the third quarter. Jalen Marshall returned that punt, you know, the punt for a touchdown to go up 21-20, and then they scored three straight touchdowns to make it 42-20. But it was a tight game. And Indiana, look, at this point, Indiana is not a very quality football team, and they really struggle to throw the ball. So it was very surprising. You know, Ohio State did turn the ball over a few times. They still racked up over 500 yards of total offense, and you know, Barrett had a pretty big game. He had about 380 yards of total offense and four touchdowns. But, yeah, I mean, they shouldn't have been this close with Indiana. They're infinitely better at pretty much all facets of the game, every position. So, in my mind, it doesn't really – look, you're going to have games where you just don't execute as well as you want to. So, you know, was this game a little surprising early on? Yeah, it was. But Ohio State is a really good football team, and they turned it on when they needed to. And really, it was the Jalen Marshall show. I think he had four consecutive touchdowns. I mean, that kid's a pretty good athlete. So it doesn't really hurt them in my eyes. I still think they're one of the better football teams right now, and I think they're deserving of an opportunity. If they can get through Michigan and win the Big Ten championship, I don't know how you can hold them out. I know we talked a lot about, you know, the Big Ten over the course of the season. Early on, it looked like, regardless of what they did, they wouldn't get a team in the playoff. But things have kind of, you know, come to fruition, and it's worked out to a point where they're right there in the mix. And if Mississippi State, if they falter, which there's a good chance that they will, or if they don't win the SEC, which they probably won't at this point, it's going to come down to Ohio State, Baylor, and TCU. And in my mind, I think you'd be hard-pressed to turn away an Ohio State team, a Big Ten champion, even over a Big 12, you know, conference winner who's had to play a round robin style. They don't have a conference championship, but they do play everybody. But Ohio State didn't really. Nothing about this game really changed my mind about them. They're a really good football team. Their quarterback's playing really well right now, and you know, I think they could. They have the horses on both sides of the ball to compete with any of those teams in the top, you know, five or six. So I'm kind of hoping that they can take care of business against Michigan and win the Big Ten championship, although Wisconsin will be a very difficult game. But I'd like to see them in that Final Four. I think they'd be deserving of it.
Well, I was going to ask you that. We're going to pick that Minnesota-Wisconsin game a little later, so we won't jump on that. But what's your thought about this Wisconsin-Ohio State game if it does happen? And Wisconsin can sure run the football, and we know Melvin Gordon is just ridiculous. He's 2,109 yards, 26 touchdowns on the season with Kajana Carter, like 8.3 yards per carry. And I mean, he's got to be up there on the Heisman list, I would think. But this kid can run the ball, and Wisconsin is going to run the football at Ohio State. How do you see that game faring?
Yeah, that's a really great question, and that would be a heck of a football game. And Ohio State, I know what I just said about Ohio State. I really like them as a team, but that game is going to be a really interesting game because I'll tell you what, Wisconsin's defense is really, really good. We've talked about Penn State all year, but Wisconsin's defense, and they lost eight starters from last year, but that defense has been lights out. They will challenge Ohio State, and their physicality, they will challenge them at the point of attack. And I think when Ohio State sometimes gets challenged at the point of attack, you see them kind of clam up, and they're not that same team. And we've seen the SEC do that to them a number of times. A lot of people think, oh, well, the SEC beat them because they're just faster. That's not true. Ohio State's got enough athletes in and around the skill positions to compete with anyone. But the SEC, those teams, Florida, you know, some of those teams that beat them in some of those big games, they just beat them up at the point of attack. So that's one thing that does concern me about Ohio State is if they get punched in the mouth by Wisconsin, which will happen, how do they respond? How do they respond against that defense? How do they respond when Wisconsin lines up and just tries to pound the football with Melvin Gordon, who is one of the best backs that we've seen in a long time? He is so talented, so good, and he is up there in the Heisman right now. I mean, really, I think when you're looking at the Heisman, it's it's probably a two, maybe a three-person race, but I think Marcus Mariota and Melvin Gordon are the two top guys at this point. And, you know, depending on how things play out, I mean, I think that's where you're going to get your winner this year. But that game is going to be just – that's going to be a great game. I mean, if you're a lover of Big Ten football, you know, power football, that's going to be a fun game to watch. And I most certainly am concerned about that for Ohio State because Wisconsin can beat them. There's no question. Ohio State's going to have to man up and really be physical at the point of attack and slow Melvin Gordon down as much as possible because Wisconsin still doesn't throw the football very well. They're not that efficient in doing that, but they run the ball so well, and they run it when you know they're going to run it so well. So that's going to be a heck of a football game. And, you know, if Ohio State, even if they get past Michigan, that game is just going to be a slugfest, and they're going to have to do everything that they possibly can to win that game. So that's one of the games that I'm actually really excited about. I can't wait to see that happen. I hope it comes to fruition because that would be a heck of a football game.
Yeah, and you know, we'll see how it plays out this weekend, and assuming they take care of Minnesota, we'll be making all those championship game picks next week. So it will be fun. It's going to require a lot of thought because I don't think, forget the rankings, I don't think it's a shoe-in Ohio State wins that game. So it's going to be fun. I'm going to look forward to seeing that. Hey, what about what? And I bet the goon was just probably slobbering all over his ribs and cold beer watching that performance by Oklahoma freshman running back Samaje Perine. 34
right.
Carries, 427 yards, 5 touchdowns. Broke the record that Melvin Gordon set the week before. That record stood for years since LaDainian Tomlinson. They break it 1 week and turn around and break it the next. And you know, I was gushing over Perine, you know, when I saw him live at West Virginia earlier in the year. This kid's a beast.
Yeah, I wanted you to talk about that because you saw him live. So, I mean, you would have a better perspective on that than any of us because you saw him up close and personal. But, I mean, what a game. What, 2 weeks in a row to break that, like you said, long-standing record. And, I mean, what are we, in the 80s? Is this like, is Oklahoma running the wishbone again? I mean, what, 400? I mean, that's insane. That's absolutely insane. He ran wild. He's a really special player. And, you know, it's a shame Oklahoma didn't get the kind of quarterback play that we thought they were going to get this year. And their defense kind of let them down in a few games. But, I mean, that kid has been absolutely outstanding. I mean, what a talented young man. And, you know, he's going to have a tremendous career there at Oklahoma. But, yeah, between he and Melvin Gordon, just to have those back-to-back games of over 400 yards rushing is just absolutely insane. You know, especially nowadays with, you know, just so many athletes and, you know, all around the football field, for one person to account for that amount, you know, a quarterback is one thing when they're throwing the football, but as a running back to account for that much, you know, that much yards in a game, it's absolutely insane. It really is. Well, what a performance.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, I did not see the whole game, but I did see some of it. I saw the highlights. That was some of the worst tackling I've ever seen in the history of football. They might not have tackled him if they were playing flag football.
Yeah, it probably harkens back to some of those old films that you see. I love watching those old NFL films where, you know, Harry Callis would do those games. I love his voice there. But, you know, when you see the running backs, you know, basically, you know, back in the day when a lot of the athletes didn't play defense, you see these running backs running through 10 tackles, you know, to make these long runs. It was kind of reminiscent of that. Like you
right.
said, there just wasn't any tackling. But, I mean, the kid is a sturdy, he's a big sturdy kid. You know, he obviously has a good combination of speed and power, and he's been effective all year long. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, the tackling was terrible. But still, I mean, for one guy, you know, in two consecutive weeks to rush for over 400 yards, and that's insane. It's just insane.
Yeah. You know, the interesting thing about Oklahoma is Perine is just one of, I think it was three or four monster recruit running backs that they had, and some of them ran into problems. Some got into some legal issues and all that. I think one of them got hurt. But Perine was just one of them. They had a whole herd of them. And I don't think he was considered to be the best.
No, he definitely wasn't considered to be the best. They had a kid that was recruited out of California that was a 5-star running back, which probably one of the best combo backs that we've seen come out in a while. That kid got into trouble, and he wasn't able to play this season. So you're right. No, he was definitely more lightly regarded in comparison to maybe some of the other recruits that they bought in. But, hey, you know, next man up, and he got the opportunity, and he obviously ran with it. And, you know, I think those other players might be hard-pressed to find their way into the lineup after this year.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing that really impressed me of seeing him live was just what a physical man-child he is. And he's 18 years old or whatever, 19 years old. And, I mean, he is built like a 28-year-old guy that's been in the league lifting weights for 10 years. I mean, he's just unbelievable. Physical.
Yeah, you're right. It's going to be interesting to see what happens because he's borderline, you know, at the point where he's bigger than most fullbacks that are playing in the NFL. The guy's like 245 pounds.
Yep. He's
240
just a kid.
Plus pounds, and you're right. He's a young kid. It's, you know, he's obviously going to put on some, you know, some muscle here in the next couple of years. So, you know, we haven't seen too many 260 pound, you know, tailbacks. Ron Dane probably wasn't even that big. I mean, that's a big kid, 5'11", 240 plus. That's a big kid.
Yep. Well, hey, we talked about Will Muschamp being out last week at Florida. I got to see him, obviously, this week at Florida when I went up to see Eastern Kentucky play up there. And Muschamp, I don't know how much you've got to see the goings-on, but he's handled himself like a first-class guy, really. Really, I can speak nothing but highly of the way he's handled his situation and handled his players. But with that said, I would say that certainly Michigan's loss to Maryland sealed the fate of Brady Hoke. If there was any question, I would say there's not now. Even if he was able to beat Ohio State, which is highly unlikely, I don't think that even keeps his job. And I'm going to take a step out, and we've talked about this a couple weeks ago with our buddy Al Golden. I think this is a must-win for him against Pitt this weekend. That waxing he got at Virginia the other night was not good, and the natives have been restless down here to begin with, and that was not a good showing for the Hurricanes of Virginia. I say Brady Hoke's next up, and Al Golden might not be far behind.
Yeah, but Brady's definitely – he's done, Bill. We talked about that midway through the season. There's really no hope for him to come back. They're going to have a new AD. The AD's obviously going to want to, you know, probably, you know, make a decision on that, I guess. I mean, he'll be in there and making the decision at that point. But regardless of that, Brady Hoke is gone. I mean, he's as good as gone, and they'll replace him with
Sunday morning.
Sure.
I'd say Sunday morning he's gone.
Very well could be gone Sunday morning. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I don't think they'll waste any time. They can't. They're losing recruits just as quickly as, you know.
Yeah, they've lost about 7 or 8 kids that were in the ESPN 150 already. That have decommitted, and it's an awful situation at Michigan right now. And you're right, he's gone. It could happen as early as Sunday, and that's it with the Brady Hoke era. And obviously, our friend Al Golden down at Miami, that wasn't a good showing against Virginia this past weekend. And you know, like you said, the natives have been restless, you know, for probably the last, you know, year and a half. And it's really a very unique situation, an interesting dynamic down there in Miami, because you have, obviously, you know, you have a fan base and you have people that remember the Hurricanes in the 80s and 90s and all the way up into the early 2000s and what they did as a program and how good they were. And, you know, the truth is that the landscape of college football has changed a lot since 2000. And with Miami, you know, having some issues and, you know, kind of falling apart there, and Al Golden came in. I think Al Golden did the best job that he could possibly do in kind of, you know, turning that program around, especially from a discipline standpoint. They had some issues with some players. And you know Al Golden better than I do, but, I mean, it seems that, you know, people really like the fact that he runs a program. You know, he's just not a coach looking to win games. He runs a program, and he's in there, and he's doing good things to obviously help these kids go on and be productive citizens and not just football players. So, I mean, you got to give him credit for that. But at the end of the day, they do get paid millions of dollars to win football games. So, you know, it's going to be tough. I think Al, if he can win this weekend, you know, I think he can probably, you know, get by and maybe have, you know, himself at least another season. He may need to make some changes to that coaching staff, which people have been kind of calling for the last few years. And I know he's definitely very loyal to some of those guys that are on his staff, but you know, when your neck's on the line, you know, sometimes you got to make those tough decisions. We've seen it with Mac Brown and other coaches in the past. You know, it's unfortunate when that happens, but you know, Al most certainly is on his one of his last lives, you know, here as a head football coach down there in South Florida. So, you know, if he can make it through this season, you know, I think the only way he stays is if he convinces the administration that, you know, he's going to make some changes. And, you know, they have a lot of talent. That's the thing. You know, the Virginia thing, Virginia's a good football team. They have a really good defense. You know, they were coming off of, obviously, a tough game against Florida State where they probably should have won that game. So there was going to be a little bit of a letdown, and they probably – the game just got away from them a little bit. But we'll see. I think Al can make it out this year, and he's probably going to have to make some changes. But we'll see. Pitt could be an interesting game. They run the football really well. They have one of the best running backs in the country. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, you know, for Pitt, this is a bowl-eligible game. They're 5-6. They need this win. Miami's sitting at 6-5. So they don't quite need it, but they need it. You know, they need it moving forward. I think the interesting thing down there in South Beach is, in Coral Gables, is that the people that are making a real lot of noise about their displeasure with Al are the former players. And they carry a lot of weight, and they're on the radios and, you know, and all that. And you know, they don't like the schemes. They don't like the things that are going on the field. And they're knowledgeable guys, obviously. They've been there, done that. So that's the underlying factor in what's hurting Al.
Yeah. No, you're right. But I think that, you know, there has to be a level of you know, I think they have to be reasonable about the situation. I've commented a few times that I'm not of the opinion that the Miami job is the Miami job that it used to be, for many reasons. I think they've really changed the way they look at things, both academically and athletically at that institution. And I think that, you know, obviously with the issues that they have with their current facilities, and I know they're doing some redoing of that, renovating and such, but with that stadium being as far away as it is, and, you know, with that fan base being, you know, kind of aloof as a fan base, I mean, they have, you know, so many things going on down there. You know, it's, you know, they're into so many different things that, you know, I think the Miami football program kind of gets, you know, it gets lost in the shuffle, if you will. So for many reasons, this job is not the job that it used to be. Is it still a really good job? It's a really good job. Is it a great job like it was when, you know, they were at their peak? Probably not. You know, since they've been in the ACC, they're barely playing 500 football. And that's, if anybody would have told us, you know, when they were making their run, once they joined the ACC, Miami's going to play 500 football, I think we all would have said, you're crazy. But the truth is that I understand, you know, that the players and the alumni, they want their program to be back to where it was. My only point is I don't know if you could ever get back to being what that was. I think there's a new reality down in South Florida. That's my opinion, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was a special time. There were players there that, you know, I've heard a lot. Well, they haven't had a defensive lineman as good as Warren Sapp and Jerome Brown in a long time. Well, you're absolutely right, because those guys have Buss and Canton.
Right.
You know, Jerome would have if he hadn't, you know, if he'd have finished out, and Warren Sapp does. I mean, those guys aren't standing on street corners, you know, everywhere. They had some great, great players, and they did great things with them. You're just not doing that. You know, you're just not doing that year in and year out. So,
I was just gonna. You're not finding Warren Sapp and Jerome Brown just walking along South Florida every year. I mean, those are once in a lifetime kind of guys.
That's right. That's what I said. They're Hall of Famers. They're not just, you know, just everyday guys. Well, listen, let's get to our picks. And My man Keith did send his picks in to me by email, wherever he got stuck, so I have them. So we'll do that. But first, hey, I picked up some ground on you last week, my friend.
You
look like me. You were a 1-4 week. And thank goodness for Villanova for you, my friend, or you'd have been whitewashed. You had Penn State. You had USC. You went with Kansas. You went with West Virginia with me,
yep.
And you lost that one. And you took Notre Dame, and you lost that one. So you had a 1-4 week, my friend.
That's solid, right? That's really solid.
That sounds a lot like what I've been doing.
Keith
finished with a 2-3 week, and I finished with a 3-2 week. So I picked up a couple games on you, and now we're back nip and tuck. You are 52-27. I am 51-28, and the big man is 45-34. So it's coming together, and You know, we've got a big rivalry week weekend to pick this week. We've got championship week next week. There's a whole lot of games going on yet.
Absolutely.
All right, so here's what we have. I am going to give you, let's see, we got Michigan State, Penn State is the first one, and I am going to go, we'll throw Keith's out there, then I'll throw yours, and then we'll do mine. How's that?
Sounds good.
All right, Keith is going with Sparty, and he says it's going to be a late pullout, and that Penn State is going to show up and play very well on senior day.
Well, I'm sure they will play hard, but Michigan State is a better football team, and I think Michigan State, you call it, whether they win by 10, 17, I don't really care. I think they'll win the game, though.
I'm with you. I don't see any way that Penn State can stay with them, and hopefully the defense can hold the rope. All right, how about Cincinnati at Temple? Keith took Cincinnati in that game.
Yep. I'm gonna follow suit. I'm gonna go Cincinnati as well. Cincinnati is a pretty good offense. Temple struggles offensively, even though their defense has been pretty good. But I'll go Cincinnati.
I'm going Owls. I'm gonna go with the Owls. I'm gonna stay with them, and they need this to get to the bowl, right? This is their sixth. They need a sixth win, right?
Yeah, they're looking for their sixth win. Correct.
Yeah, I'm going Temple. This is a big game for them. Okay, the Wildcats are off, as we mentioned. They'll be back at it next week, so we'll skip that. How about number 13, Arizona State, at number 15, Arizona? The Goon picks Arizona. Things are playing well. They're at home, and they're going to get it done.
Yeah, I'm going to go Arizona as well. I like Arizona State a lot, but I like Arizona at home. I like what Rich Rod's doing, and Keith is right. They are playing really well right now. So that win that they had at Utah last week, that was impressive. That was really impressive. So I'll go Arizona as well.
Well, you know what? I'm going Arizona too, but it's funny that you've jumped all the way off that ASU bandwagon after they got knocked off up there in Corvallis.
The Pac-12 is tough, my friend, but I have to be objective. I have to call the games as I see them week in and week out. So although I do like what Arizona State is doing, I mean, Arizona at home, Arizona's playing really well right now. I have to go Arizona if I'm being objective.
All right. How about Michigan at number 6, Ohio State? The Goon says, bye-bye, Brady. It's a woodshed beating.
Yeah, I'll go with the expert, Mr. Goon, on this one. I'll take Ohio State. There's no question I'll take Ohio State.
And it's a woodshed game. You in on that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Okay, number 18, Georgia Tech. Oh, by the way, I'm taking Ohio State, too. Number 18, Georgia Tech, at number 10, Georgia. Now you have to like the Goon because you know he's been all over this Georgia thing, right? His comment was, the refs and the bowl people are not going to let the SEC not in the big show. Got to cover their booties if Georgia wins the SEC. Got to have the ranked high enough. Been saying it for weeks.
Well, he's going Georgia.
He's going Georgia.
Yeah. This I'll tell you what. I'm going to go Georgia as well, but it would not surprise me one bit if Georgia Tech wins this football game. Georgia Tech, their defense is really good. They're very athletic, and obviously offensively, Georgia is not going to play many teams like Georgia Tech. So this game could be really interesting, but I will go with Georgia at home. But that's a game to watch for sure.
I am going with Georgia Tech.
There you go.
I'm going with Georgia
Tech. I knew somebody would have the guts to do it.
One simple reason. Florida ran the football against Georgia, and Georgia had no answers. That's what Georgia Tech does, and they do it pretty well. I'm going with the Ramblin' Wreck.
Hey,
all right,
number four,
Mississippi State at number 8, Ole Miss.
Yep.
Keith says the Egg Bowl was the most important of all time. He's taking the Bulldogs.
All right, well, yeah, I mean, Mississippi State, I think they're a little bit more balanced, but I'm going to take Ole Miss at home to upset Mississippi State. I think Bo Wallace will play well. I think there's a lot of revenge factor going on in this game from last year. I think Ole Miss has had a tough stretch here the last couple weeks. They're not playing really well, but I think they rebound. I think they play really, really hard. I think they get after it, and I think they find a way to beat Mississippi State. So I'll take Ole Miss.
All right. Well, hey, we're down to 90 seconds, so we got to move pretty quickly. I have Ole Miss as well. Number 25, Minnesota, at number 16, Wisconsin. He's going upset of the week. He's taking the Gophers.
Yeah, no chance. I'll take Wisconsin.
I'm taking Wisconsin as well. How about Notre Dame at UCL or USC? Neither team is ranked, amazingly. Keith has taken the Trojans. And, by the way, he's saying PSU and Notre Dame in the Pinstripe Bowl in New York. But he's got USC.
Yeah, that'll be a good game. I'll take USC as well in this game. But, I mean, who knows? They're both 7-4. It's been a terrible season for both. But I'll take USC.
I'm taking USC as well. How about number 14, Auburn, at number 1, Alabama? Keith says roll damn tide.
Well, I'm going to go with
Thunder,
Keith
by
on
the
this
way.
One. I'm going to take Alabama as well. I think Alabama win the game.
I'm going Auburn. I'm going
there
Auburn.
Well, I hope that happens.
Two Southeast Conference losses for everybody. All right. Well, that brings us to the top of the hour. We'd like to thank our sponsor, www.south-beach-shopping.com, as well as my partners, Terry Austin and the Goon, Keith Collin, for their great insights. We'd like to remind our listeners we'll be back next Tuesday night, December 2nd at 7 p.m., to talk about last weekend's games. We hope you enjoyed the show.